Back together with you again, chatting it up Monday, brand new week, July 28th, 2025, on Connecticut Today. We welcomed back to the show Republican State Senate member Rob Sampson. He talked about the reassignment of a high-ranking state employee after controversy over his use of a state-issued credit card. University of New Haven Associate Professor of Accounting and Taxation, Dr. James Mose, dropped by to analyze the latest Trump White House tariff news centered on the European Union. CBS News reporter Olivia Rinaldi joined us from the White House live with the latest on the Jeffrey Epstein case. I also had some thoughts on the latest dismal national poll numbers for Democrats. As we mentioned, we have some folks from the state Senate here on the Republican side signing a letter, Henry Martin, Steve Harding, and Rob Sampson, looking for maybe just some answers here as to what's going on with Terrence Cheng. Kudos to the Hartford Current for running this weekend story, you know, detailing, I guess, unless I'm missing something here, Mr. Cheng just getting a new office, perhaps. And that's the penalty for misusing a state credit card. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. One of those folks signing that letter, Republican State Senate member Rob Sampson, ranking Republican on the legislature's new government oversight committee. How about that? Rob, good afternoon. Are we going to have any oversight on this fiasco or not?
Well, I'd love to see some oversight, Paul. And we actually did. You know, you kind of caught me off guard with the question, but it's a great question. And we did actually pass a bill last year, Senate Bill 1468, mm-hmm. which is going to set up new procedures for P cards across state
nice.
Government.
Nice.
Somebody's going to have to be assigned to be kind of the gatekeeper and to keep track of what these P cards can be used for and, you know, account for how the money is spent. So I think that that's a definite step in the right direction. I was overall pretty frustrated with how the Government Oversight Committee got started. You know, I wanted to jump in and turn it into a doge for Connecticut.
Oh, geez.
But we did accomplish a few minor things. So, I mean, I guess I'll take what I can,
right? But boy, you try to do doge here, Rob. You better check your brake lines and have somebody taste your food. Let me tell you something like that. Wow. Geez. Okay, so Mr. Cheng here, this was well documented. Folks found out that he was making 400 and change a year running the Connecticut State College and University system, not UConn. We should say that's separate. This is the other system, Eastern, Southern, Western, and Central, plus a couple of other schools. So, Rob, tell me, am I wrong here or not? Does it just appear to me he's just getting a new office here with some new duties? Because he didn't really, I mean, I know he's technically not the chancellor anymore, but what else really happened to this guy?
Right. Yeah, no, he's been demoted or promoted, depending on how you want to look at it, to strategic advisor.
Ah.
I don't know. Now he's got a job that pays the same amount where he has to do much less work. I don't know. That sounds like a promotion to me.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, very frustrated. I mean, this is going back to December when this all first came out. And at the time, he had a year and a half to go on his contract, which I believe ends at the end of June of next year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this has just been kind of plodding along. It took until the end of February for the legislature to actually get him to come before us. And he did a bit of a mea culpa, but that was the end of it. You know, it's remarkable, though, listening to the conversation you're having with your listeners, Paul, is that, you know, the idea that somehow this is happening because they're afraid that, you know, going to court might end up costing an even prettier penny, you know, but they've already, you know, changed this gentleman's job classification, which to me is an acknowledgement that something was wrong.
Yeah.
And if they're worried about getting sued, I mean, I think he would have grounds to do that if he had, you know, a dispute over what happened. I don't think there's a dispute over what happened. I'm told that the amount spent is above $25,000.
Oh.
It is travel, alcohol and tips, $60, quote-unquote, succulent steaks.
Ah.
You know, this is the kind of thing, a guy making $442,000 a year doesn't need an expense account, frankly. And to be abusing it on top of that is just a slap in the face to the hardworking taxpayers in the state and the people that are paying tuition to go to the Connecticut State University system.
And Rob, you know what? You're right. I was going to touch on this. Listen, if I want to buy stuff for whatever reason, I'm trying to schmooze somebody, or it might be on the margins or whatever. You know what? If I'm making 400 larger a year, Rob, I'm paying for the steak out of my own pocket, and I'm getting a receipt to show that I paid for it out of my own pocket. But Rob, you see this all the time. This is the tone deafness that goes on with all branches of government. Where the common, how can they think the common person, Rob, wouldn't look at this and go, are you kidding me? Really?
Right. Yeah, I'm hoping that there's people driving down, Route 15, yep. Route 8 right now, yelling at the radio in our conversation, because I know I would be. It's extremely frustrating. And, we've done a lot, Senate Republicans, Senator Harding and myself in particular, and a few of our other Republican senators, we've been highlighting corruption at the state government level in a big way over the last year. And it seems like there's one thing after another. You got this situation with Pura, mm-hmm. And Senator Fanfara and the Marissa Gillette thing. And then you've got tow trucks with the DMV. I mean, it just goes on and on. It seems like there's a new, potential swamp, just like people think of Washington and the deep state and the swamp. Well, in Connecticut, we've had the Democrats have had complete and utter control of state government, all three branches, for decades. And, it's hard to know just how deep this type of thing goes.
And Rob, the one that gets me, that's kind of one of my pet things to just go off on, and a lot of people, Rob, it's out of mind because it's out of sight. It's way in the eastern part of the state. The whole state pier fiasco and how much that's ended up costing. And it's like you mentioned it. It's a yawn, whatever. Hey, it was supposed to be, what, $90 million? And how high are we on that fiasco now? It's mind-boggling. So, Rob, whether it's the state pier, the tow truck stuff, or this stuff with Terrence Chiang, it's all a slap in the face to taxpayers of this state. Hey, you're an ATM. We'll just keep going back to you.
Right. Couple that with a state budget that increases spending almost 14% over the next couple of years. I'm getting phone calls almost daily from my constituents. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are senior citizens in my district. These folks are having difficulty deciding, what bills to pay, whether they're going to purchase their medication or pay their, just recently increased car taxes, their electric bill. I mean, these are all things that state government does have some impact on. Mm-hmm. And I think they're all reasons why voters, next November, think of things a little bit differently if they have this stuff on the mind.
So just before we wrap up here, Rob, I just want to make sure I'm not eligible for a P card then. Is that what you're telling me here? I can't get one of those fancy state credit cards in, right?
Not currently, unless you get yourself one of these cushy state jobs.
For 400 large a year when I'm asking taxpayers to pay for dinner. Oh, man. Rob Sampson, Rob, thanks. We'll chat down the road, my friend. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Always my pleasure, Paul. Thanks for
having
me. Thank
you, Rob. Appreciate that. Yeah, this guy, Terrence Chiang, who was, everybody was outraged at this. Oh, we're going to get him. Yeah, what'd you get? You're basically, folks, they're giving him a new office. He's now an advisor or whatever whatever. So he still makes $442,000 a year. Never used the stipend, from what I understand. That was a big controversy, too. Has the guy ever moved to Connecticut? But instead, he was taking chauffeured rides from New York State? Well, Paul, don't you know he's done a great job? Well, maybe he has done a great job, but that doesn't excuse treating the state kind of like your expense account. I'm sorry. If I'm making 400 and change large, I ain't putting concert tickets. I'm not putting wine. I'm not putting stakes on my state-issued credit card. You talk about arrogant. My God. We had a caller a few minutes ago say that she went in at an area deli and brought some prosciutto di Parma, and it was 20-something bucks a pound, and the friendly deli person said, well, tariffs. Okay, there you go. So what's the deal now with tariffs? Big one, agreement between the U.S. and the European Union. Let's go to our tariff expert. He's been with us numerous times, University of New Haven Associate Professor of Accounting and Taxation, Dr. James Mose. back with us today. Hey, Jim, it's Paul here at WICC again. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good, Paul. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. And boy, a lot of interesting stuff here. How significant, Jim, is this deal, this 15% deal now with the European Union? What does that exactly mean here?
That's a pretty big deal. Okay. The European Union has been one of those holdouts.
Yeah.
They were not really interested in negotiating. This is a low rate. I mean, not more than a few hours ago, Trump came along and said, hey, we're expecting our the rates worldwide, the tariff rates, to be 15 to 20%.
Mm-hmm.
All said and done. You know, there's 200 odd countries, so things are always in flux with him. Things are always changing.
Yeah.
That's well down from the 15 to 50% that he said last week. So the move on these things is phenomenal. And this EU one is a good deal.
Why is it a good deal, Jim? Explain that to some of my listeners who admittedly might say, oh, I don't believe in this tariff stuff. Why is he doing this? Why do you think this is favorable, Jim?
Well, it's favorable because historically the tariffs were much higher. Particularly on things like wine and vegetables and other things, a lot of things that we buy from the European Union, flowers. You know, there are some, 12 or 13 odd countries in the European Union, so this is going to be like a tariff agreement on 13 of the 200 countries. They're all going to be holding the same. Now, there's going to be some minor differences depending upon products, but that is a lot less than it was. I don't know if you remember the French wine debacle of a few years ago.
Oh, I do remember this. Yes.
Well, now it's going to be from like down from like 50% to 15%. So those prices should fold through to the U.S. fully.
Now, Jim, will there be any blowback, you think, for maybe some? Now, you talk about wine, obviously. We do have a wine industry in this this country. There's wineries here in Connecticut. There's the great vineyards in California. Is this going to cause any consternation from domestic folks here if they're competing with, say, an industry or a type of import, Jim, where the duties will now be lower?
I don't really think so. I mean, your domestic wine consumers are pretty locked into that.
Mm-hmm.
I personally am a fan of the Virginia wine, the Trump winery. They've got some good ones.
Yeah.
Up in Connecticut, we have another winery, which is good.
Sure.
New York wineries. I don't think you're going to see that much because customers who buy that are pretty much locked into that. And I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference in the price differential when it comes down. Might there be some inflation to it? Maybe. You know, this whole inflation nonsense with the tariffs is
yeah, let me ask you that, Jim. That was going to be my next question here. Dr. Jim Mose is from the University of New Haven, Associate Prof of Accounting and Taxation. So I'm hearing you, Jim, and saying you think these are good, and then I'm banging through our networks here at the station and all the, you know, some of the cable news networks, and you're hearing some people saying, oh, my God, inflation's going to go nuts. So we go from great to horrible. What's their argument? How the naysayers here, Jim, are arguing what?
I'm not even sure because I'll tell you, we have been looking at these tariffs. The tariffs have been settling at lower rates than they were all originally threatened at.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. We've got some big ones still playing. Think about Japan. We settled that greatly. Do you realize there was 400% tariff on exported rice to Japan? They would export their cars here, but we couldn't. They wouldn't import ours there. So it's a balance of trade as well as just the tariffs. The naysayers, they've been saying things, inflation's going to ruin us.
Mm-hmm.
Quite frankly, when it first started, maybe in March or February, March, August, April, thereabouts, it should have already ruined us by now if you listen to them. I mean, strong global growth caused by the tariffs and the negotiations is clearly creating a less than expected inflationary impact. That's what I'm seeing.
All right. And finally, Jim, one of the areas that is always discussed here that affects millions of people is automobiles. And, people like a certain amount of car and, they can only afford so much of a monthly payment or a total price on the car, which are not inexpensive. Now, what do you think the effect will be on the auto industry globally?
Well, I think what you're going to see is in order to avoid tariffs, what a lot of these countries are doing are building plants in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Products are built in the U.S. I mean, that was part of the Japan deal. They gave us so much money. They committed to so much of investment in the U.S. in new plants. If they build in those new plants and sell in the U.S., there won't be any tariffs. Tariffs are only on imports.
Mm-hmm.
If you have something that's built in the country, there's no import tariff on it because it's here already. So I think on the global market,
yeah.
I think, prices really never come down for some reason.
Yeah.
Unbeknownst to me. But I don't think they're going to go up because of tariff inflation or anything. I think everybody was running around like a chicken without their head, so to speak, saying, oh, the tide is falling, the sky is falling, everything is going to. And months ago when we first started, what did I tell you? If there is any inflation, it's going to be small. It's not going to be long-lived. Mm-hmm. We're seeing that now with the way he is bringing down the tariffs. China is the big play right now.
Yeah, I was going to ask you finally to wrap up here, Jim. So is the really big elephant in the room still China here, and how do we figure that out?
Absolutely. Well, they're meeting in Stockholm right now, day one.
Yeah.
There is rumor, and it's only rumor. Right now, he has given them to August 12th, I guess it is,
okay,
to come to the table with some type of real deal. That there's talk that might be extended again.
Okay.
They may be kicking the can down the road.
Yeah.
Okay, but it's just talk at this point. President Trump has not come up and said that. Could be the naysayers again. Who knows?
Okay. All right.
But we need to settle our score with China.
Yep.
Without.
And Xi Jinping, of course. Dr. James Mohs, University of New Haven, Associate Professor of Accounting and Taxation. Jim, thank you again. We'll keep an eye on this, and I'm sure we'll talk down the road. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure, Paul. Take care.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it. Dr. James Mohs, who seems to think the tariffs are a good idea. Talking about things, the story that just gets weirder and weirder every day. Just when you think you have it figured out, here comes the legal twister. We, of course, talk about the Jeffrey Epstein story, something Mr. Trump was championing during the campaign. Now it's, Jeffrey who? CBS News D.C. correspondent Olivia Rinaldi is with us. Olivia, good afternoon. I see we have, another twist and turn today in this story? I mean, my God, when does it end? What's going on here?
Paul, it's a story that literally just won't go away. Two things kind of happened today. One, Trump is out in Scotland, and he was asked about Epstein during this press conference that he had done today.
Mm-hmm.
And he was asked, about what happened between him and Epstein that led to the rift between them. Remember, Trump keeps saying, we had all these issues, we had all these problems, he was a creep, I threw him out of my club.
Yeah.
Today, Trump actually elaborated on what led to this breakup between him and Epstein resulting from that ban at Mar-a-Lago. And Trump explained that Epstein did something, quote, inappropriate. And then Trump went on to say that Epstein, quote, stole people that worked for me, end quote. That is what Trump said Epstein did. And then Trump said when he did it a second time, then he threw him out of the club. So then he was also asked if he had ever visited Epstein Island.
Yeah.
Trump said, quote, he had never had the privilege of going to his island. That's what he said. But he also noted he turned it down. He was asked and he turned it down because he didn't want to go to the island. So new little twists there, little bits of information that we all went, wait, what? Like, okay, not because people that you worked with you, he tried to steal them or was doing something inappropriate, and then he invited you to the island and you didn't go. So interesting thing there. We also know what's happening right now is that the Justice Department is still doing those interviews with Ghislaine Maxwell, member, former associate, former girlfriend of Epstein, who's serving a prison sentence for her association for sex trafficking crimes related to Epstein. So she's being interviewed by Todd Blanche, who's one of the DOJ deputy attorney generals.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some reporting out there that she was given some immunity so that she could talk at length about some of the people that were involved in this case. Her lawyer says she talked about over 100 people that were involved in this case. And one last piece of information, Trump did not rule out pardon for Ghislaine Maxwell. He was asked about it twice this weekend, once on Friday, today, and again today. And Trump said, I'm allowed to give her a pardon, but no one's approached me with it. No one's asked me about it. And he goes, it's news about that, the aspect of it, but right now it's inappropriate to talk about. So kind of saying, you know, it'd be interesting if I did it, but it's I don't want to talk about it right now.
Yeah.
So not ruling it out.
No, and Olivia, finally, I'm seeing also this twist here with involving Rupert Murdoch and deposing him. I mean, my God.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
So that's related to that Wall Street Journal lawsuit, that defamation lawsuit that the president filed against the paper for that report that they had about that bawdy birthday letter that the president allegedly wrote to Epstein for his 50th birthday. Now, we have not independently confirmed that letter, but based on the reporting, they say they wrote him a birthday letter. Trump denies it. He says he has never, he does not draw. He doesn't do lewd drawings either of women, which is what was included in the report. So as a result, he's suing them. As a part of that lawsuit, he's suing Rupert Murdoch, and he wants to get Rupert Murdoch deposed and soon, citing his age. Now, mind you, this is someone who has been a longtime friend of the president. So really interesting twist there. Clearly, the knives coming out on both sides of that lawsuit as it ratchets up.
Yeah. Olivia, thanks. And having been a street reporter for about 10 or 15 years, I know what you're going through. You write a script for this. You write a script for this. And 2 minutes after you wrote that script, it's no good. So I.
Yeah. So, my true social notifications are always on. Always.
Exactly. Olivia Rinaldi, CBS News. Olivia, thanks. We'll chat down the road. Thanks.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. There you go. I have maintained over the past few months since Election Day, when people ask me, hey, what do you think happened on Election Day? What about Trump? What about Kamala Harris? Whatever. I have maintained that the decision people made on Election Day was a choice of crazy over broken. And the reason people chose what some people may say, this crazy guy, the orange Cheeto, whatever, is here's the thing. Crazy, and crazy is a relative term. I don't think Trump's crazy. A lot of people do. No, in fact, we had a couple of high-ranking Democrats come out this weekend and say, guy's an incredible politician. But having said that, you can be crazy and be right about a bunch of things, right? You know people that you work with, or people in your family, or people in your church group, or people that attend the same mosque as you do, or a Buddhist temple, or Jewish synagogue, whatever, Catholic church. You say, hey, that guy's nuts, but he's successful. He runs a big company, or she's a tenured professor somewhere. He or she, they know their stuff, but they're crazy. And I've been saying for months and months and months and months on end, people, most of them, if you give them a choice, they will choose crazy, or the perception of crazy, over broken. Because the perception of broken is, it ain't going to work for me, it ain't going to work for my family, it ain't going to work for my church, whatever, my business, my industry, whatever. I've been telling you since last Election Day, this past November of 2024, that the people chose, or at least enough people did, a majority in the raw vote and a majority of the Electoral College, they took crazy over broken. They didn't want anything to do with broken, at least the majority didn't, but the enough people, and you can yell and scream at them or whatever, they crossed their fingers and they took the perception of crazy. Well, there's a new poll out there. We touched on this just a wee part last week when it came up because we were so jammed. I want to get into this. Yes, this justifies my theory of crazy over broken. And my theory that if one side is broken, the other side may elect crazy. Sometimes a good crazy, but crazy is crazy. And I've said all the time, if you want the Republican Party to be normal, the Democrats have to act normal, even in perhaps defeat. If you want the Democratic Party to be normal on a local, state, or national or world basis, the Republicans have to be kind of normal. Are we having that now? I don't know. But how about this? This is the broken part. And I know it's only 1,500 people, and I know it's registered voters, not likely voters. And I know it's only one poll, but this is bad, all right? If you're a Trump hater, it's time for you to stop fixating on Trump and ask yourselves, what's the other side going to do? Again, we had these marches over the weekend. A couple of weeks ago, we had No Kings. Then we had No More Kings. And we had these marches around Connecticut. What the hell does that do? How about if the anti-Trump side tries and figures out, I don't know, how Trump got elected? Because the other side still doesn't have any answers. Get this headline. This is from a Newsweek story that was published a couple of days ago on Saturday. Democratic Party hits its lowest approval in 30 years. 30 years, not 3 years, not 13 years, 30 years. Well, Paul, it's only one poll. Okay, it's only one poll, so is it completely wrong? Even if it's slightly outside the margin of error, the numbers are still horrible. Again, I have asked this a lot on this program, and I will continue to ask it because people need to stop banging their heads about Trump for 5 minutes because barring anything wrong with his health, mental or physical, he's not going anywhere. He's not going anywhere. You have 3.5 years to either luxuriate in what he does or to cry your freaking eyes out. And if you're going to cry, maybe you should figure out why he got elected. A new Wall Street Journal poll published on Friday shows the image of the Democratic Party has deteriorated to its lowest point in over 3 decades, according to Journal records back to 1990. Now, I know you like to say everything is Trump's fault. It's not. Any candidate, whether it's Donald Trump on the right or somebody on the left, is going to take advantage of a situation where the other side or their opponent in a specific race keeps screwing up. Only 8% of registered voters say they view the Democratic Party very favorably. 8%. 8. 8 people out of 100. 80 people out of 1,000. Extended with every decimal point you want. This is mind-boggling. 63% said the Democratic Party is out of touch with the everyday concerns of Americans. How in the hell did that happen? That's kind of rhetorical. We're going to get into that momentarily. But you tell me. What do you think? And how do you fix it? And by the way, if you are a Trump hater, if you despise Donald Trump, if the mere image of the guy makes you go, if you get agita, if you got to break out the bromo seltzer, if you got to die for the brioski, which we used to sell in my family store, if you have to die for that, then riddle me this. How did it happen? Because you cannot blame everything on Republicans and Donald Trump as much as you'd love to. Because you can't. This is a guy that ran 3 times. He won 2 of those 3 times. And he almost won the 2nd time, which would have negated the 3rd time. So what are your thoughts on this? 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. You can cry and scream and bitch and moan as much as you want about Donald Trump. Guess what? Guess what? We're at the point now where that's the point of no return. That's the point of diminishing returns. Ask yourselves, why was he reelected? Ask yourselves, what in the hell happened to the great Democratic Party of this country that is so bad? That 63% of voters in a major poll. Hey, the Wall Street Journal poll is no slouch poll. They have a high-ranking Democratic pollster and a high-ranking Republican pollster doing it for them. 63% say the Democratic Party is out of touch with Americans. And you know what, Clyde? That ain't Trump's fault. Well, and again, I don't blame people if they want to get out there and protest anti-Trump, anti-GOP. All right, fine, but do they take a moment to ask themselves, how did we get here? And then you had this poll that came out on Friday, and I know it's just a single poll. I understand that. But let me ask this. Do you ever hear on any of the newscasts, whether it's on any of the major cable channels or any of our CBS newscasts here about a big new poll showing Democrats advancing against Republicans or any sort of a bolt of lightning of support? No, you don't. So the easy thing for people to do is cry and moan and bitch and moan and complain about Trump, which you can. I'm not saying not to do that. But poll after poll after poll, to some varying degree or another, it just shows and continues to show with this Wall Street Journal poll how out of touch the once great Democratic Party of this nation is. Now, things are hunky-dory here in Connecticut. I get it. I understand it. But, you know, when you get people like Governor Lamont and the legislative leaders and people like Matt Ritter and Jason Rojas and Martin Looney and Bob Duff, you know, speaking about Trump like he's Hitler or something, they are completely shut out of any sort of reality as to what the other half of the voters in this country are saying. And, yeah, Trump may not be all that in a bag of chips, as they say, but he seems to be connecting with people better. And if you think it's going to end when he leaves office in 3 or 3.5 years, whatever, no, it's not going to, not with these numbers. So the question is, and by the way, this is our question on Facebook today, also facebook.com/voiceofCT. 63% of voters in a new poll say the Democratic Party is out of touch with Americans. Do you agree? Why or why not? And that's not good. When you're out of touch with people who tell you you're out of touch, that ain't good. So explain to me. At 203-333-9422, 333-WICC, how did this happen? How did we get here? Because one would think that if the modern-day Democrats on a national basis were getting it done, you wouldn't think that Mr. Trump would have won in two of his last three runs and only lose that second run by an aggregate total of about 40,000 votes. So again, broken versus crazy. Crazy is sitting in the big chair right now. Well, he's in Scotland. He's not in the big chair, but you know what I mean. He's in the big chair on Air Force One, okay? Broken is sitting there licking their wounds and not knowing what the hell they're doing. Now, again, the Democrats, to be fair, do have a couple of point lead on the generic House ballot, but that's not even up for discussion right now. We're still a year and change out. But help me out here. How did this happen? The party of JFK, the party of FDR, the party of Harry Truman, the party of Bill Clinton, the party of Lyndon Baines Johnson, the party of Barack Obama, is now a smoldering heap. Not here in Connecticut, but if you take the glasses off and look on the other side of the forest, you'll see what it is here. How did that happen? Was it the immigration scenario? Were enough people upset at the Dems on immigration to say, hey, I don't really love Trump, but we got to send you guys a message? Is it the message on taxes, guns, abortion? What is it? The Journal's poll shows Democrats facing a net favorability of minus 30 points, with only one-third of voters expressing anything positive toward the party. But yet people will complain and dissect Trump, which is fine. A lot of people have a job to do, but I don't get it. While Trump's handling of inflation and tariffs drew a significant disapproval, voters still trust Republicans more than Democrats to manage those issues in Congress, according to this poll. The Republican Party holds a 10-point average on inflation and a 7-point edge on tariffs. There's only one policy area where Democrats consistently outperform Republicans: health care and vaccines. Other than that, the once great Democratic Party remains broken. Is anybody paying attention to that? Does anybody want to make the tough decisions to bring the party back to the center? Or is this the image of the party that we're even getting here in Connecticut? Is the idea of a centrist Democrat gone? Oh, there are some of them in Congress. You don't hear too much of them. Are people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, perish the thought to say Chris Murphy, are they the future of the party? And if they are, we will continue with the mantra of crazy versus broken.